Hello, this is Jay Flannery the Beav. We are here to do round two in the den, our special year-long podcast about team
153.
53. See, Fats has already corrected me. That's a good thing. 153 Michigan baseball. I'm here with my good buddy, returning guest on Beav's World, Coach Chris Fetter. Fats, say hi.
Hey, Beav. Hey, Beav's World.
Just to give a quick rundown, Fets, that people don't know our history, go over to explain your background, how you got here, and how you know me.
Oh, so was a player here.
Worst day of his life, by the way. Yeah. Not me, exactly.
Yeah, was a player here from 2005, 2009. And we would frequent Pizza House at nighttime and had the best server, waiter, baseball extraordinaire that would come around and just break down the game with us over at Pizza House, and developed a friendship there and stayed in touch post-college once got into professional baseball, and worked on that side for a while, and fortunately was able to come back to Michigan when they had an opening on the pitching side, and plan to stay here as long as they'll have me. So
there you go. And holds many, many records because you're the rare good player who was here 5 years. So the because of strange situations, I would compare you, if you know Steve Morrison, who was here at Michigan, who was from 90 to 94, and he is an incredible story. First of all, I was here with him in 93 and 94, but think about this and how college sports is now. That's, he had the same head coach, defensive coordinator, and position coach for 5 years. He had Gary Moeller, Lloyd Carr, and Jim Herman. It's never going to happen. In your 5 years in Michigan, how many changes on the staff? It happens.
We had some changes, but not on the head coach or pitching coach that I had.
See,
for
the important
years.
Parts.
That also means that I wasn't much of a pro prospect either. It took until my final year to start developing some velocity, so I was fortunate to be a good college player for a while, but wasn't much of a pro prospect until my last year.
You know who else wasn't much of a pro prospect?
Who's that?
Give you a clue. You just watch him win a sixth Super Bowl.
Your buddy.
There you go.
Number 12.
Quickly, before we talk about the team and where we're going, great family-related news for you. I'm now Uncle Beav.
Yes.
So, let's talk about that
real
quick.
Uncle Beav. So we had a our first child, baby Cole Fetter. He was born January 9th, and so now we're actually seven weeks to the day.
Bingo.
So starting to sleep a little bit more, thank God.
Yes.
Obviously, it's tough with our early season travels to the South or West Coast. It's a lot of stress on my wife, but fortunately, we've had family members come and stay with her while we're on trips, so has been going well.
Your mom
so
and
far.
Dad, your mom and dad been up a lot. I'm on Facebook with them.
Yeah.
So
yeah, mom and dad, and then her mom as well. So we've gotten good support there to get us through these trips, and soon we'll have home baseball, which will make it a lot easier.
Bingo. Yeah, we're about almost two weeks away from the home opener on the 15th of that series there.
That's
hopefully
correct.
The weather's better by then.
Hopefully. I mean, it's we're 2 weeks away from, or 2 weeks and a couple days away from opening day, and it needs to get warmer here fast.
It will. Let's talk about the team, obviously. Started 6-0. Had the Citadel Series in the Binghamton. In Binghamton at the Mets facility. Then we went to Citadel in South Carolina over the week. 6-0. Break down how it's been going so far.
It's good to see guys. It's a little bit easier in your second year of being a coach.
Great point.
Guys understand what you're looking for as a positional coach, and I think year two we're starting to see their performance start to dictate kind of what we've been preaching for 2 years now. But it takes a while. There's an adjustment period there, and the guys have completely bought into filling up the strike zone as much as possible, and I think that's reflected in our results thus far. Both Tommy and Carl set the tone with their starts both weekends, and between the two of them, I think they've just walked two or three.
Tommy didn't walk any in the last game with the 27 batters.
you know, Tommy was, that was about as good of an outing as you could see in the college game, facing the minimum. He gave one hit and then threw only one pitch, caught the guy stealing on that first pitch out of the stretch. So faced 27 batters, got 27 outs, 13 strikeouts on 88 pitches, 69 strikes. It was about as good of an outing as you could find, but it goes back to their work ethic, the work they put in. They're obviously solid pitchers. They were great recruits, but them buy into just attacking the strike zone with everything they have, winning each pitch, and then once that pitch is released, we're on to the next pitch, and they completely bought in.
That's a good point by you. I think you inherited, the team was very young pitching last year, and because of that, the Carl Kaufmans, the Tommy Henrys, the Angelo, Everyday Angelo, all the young guys, you know, Dragani's hurt, Criswell, all have stepped in. And they, like you said, there's been an adjustment. They know what Coach Federer wants. I go to practice and, you know, they know what to do. You don't need to hold their hands, and it's a good thing. And you know, you veteran guys like, you know, Ben Kaiser, Weissenberger, Jack Bradenson, who's back, and it just helps a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's, you know, last year felt probably it needed to be more of a coach-led pitching staff.
Sure.
This year, it's them. They're leading the staff. I don't have to be on them 24/7 about what they should be doing.
No.
They know each of their own processes. They know what they need to do to be the best version of themselves, and they're holding each other accountable. And you know, when you can have guys like Ben Kaiser and Tommy Henry lead the group and make sure the work's getting done, and they want to do the work because they want to have a championship club. It's nice to see, and you know, product of it being the second year with them, but also them, you know, taking ownership of their team. And you know, it's ultimately when you have a championship team, it has to start with the players, and the players have to want that. And if the coaches are needing to lead and being babysitters, then it's just not going to be as successful of a group.
It also helps to have a pitching coach and go, hey, you know, I was talking to Sandy Koufax, Clayton Kershaw, and Earl Hershiser, and they said this works.
Not so much Sandy. Oral was a good mentor during the 2000, what would it be, the 2016 spring training?
Yeah.
Or 2017.
When you were sending me the pictures, you were sitting there watching, yep, Sergio Romo.
2017 spring training. I got a lot of one-on-one time with Oral, and he was a great mentor and somebody that, you know, there's a lot of push towards the new age stuff, but there still has to be a baseline of, you know, the delivery and pitching from the old school way of thinking. And, you know, I think where the game's going, it's those guys that can combine both the old school and new school and make it digestible for the players. Those are going to be the guys that are going to be the best coaches going forward. And I was fortunate to have a lot of time around Oral and Rick Honeycutt and Charlie Huff, those type of guys, to, you know, explain what's been going on for a long time in baseball. What's going on in the 60s and 70s and 80s where they were developing great pitchers with the Dodgers. And it was a great experience and fortunate to have that time with them.
Where is Rick Honeycutt now?
He is the big league pitching coach with the Dodgers.
Okay, he's got elevated. And Charlie Huff is around. Now, Earl, people do not know this, Earl Hershiser pitched Bowling Green.
He did.
He was a really good college pitcher.
Yes.
And I mentioned Kershaw, and he is one of my favorites for a lot of different reasons.
Mm-hmm.
And he's in the Frank Tanana, Pedro Martinez mode where he doesn't have the 105 that he used to have, whatever the hell he threw. And he's more of a pitcher now. And I like the guys that can evolve and change.
Mm-hmm.
And it kind of ties into what you just said. And what I liked about the list of guys, Oral Hershiser, Huff, Rick Honeycutt, who was a great reliever, Charlie Huff, knuckleballer, Oral ruined my Mets season in 1988. They're all different pitchers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I like about our staff. When you look at Tommy Henry, big lefty, I compare him to Tom Glavine. Carl, who's got a really heavy sinker ball. And Criswell, who's balls and brass. He's a big power, strong. He's an ex-closer. Goose Gossage, big tough guy. Power, fastball, slider. And I like the variety in our staff. When you feast these three guys over the weekend, there's no consistent pattern of how to approach it.
That's correct. It's there's good variety there, but at the same time, their whole goal is based upon pounding the strike zone as much as possible and coming at the opposition with as many strikes as we can. And you're right, they do it differently. Tommy's a lefty with impeccable command, and you know,
Tom Glavin. That's why he was 47. I told him that the first time I saw him throw.
He could be. I mean, he's a guy right now. He went from last year, he was pitching like more 87 to 90. Now he's sitting in the 91, 93 range and still putting it where he wants and mixing in a good changeup and good slider. And then you have Carl Kaufman, who, again, kind of like Tommy last year, was more in the 87 to 90 range, has found that next level where he's throwing his sinker at 91 to 93 and combining that with a plus-plus slider and a solid changeup. And then you go on Sundays to Jeff Criswell, who can sit 94, 95 and touch 97 when he wants, with a developing breaking pitch. It's kind of more from – it came in with a slow, loopy curveball. And last year we went to a harder slider, and it's kind of morphed in between – those two to like a power slurve, and a guy that used to throw a split, but we've gone to a changeup now, and he's got a much better feel for that. But it's learning how to take that closer's mentality and take it to starting games. And I think he's learning that, you know what, he can keep that mentality and close out each inning, and you know, as many zeros as he can put up in a row, it's the same as it is closing to starting. It's, we want to put up as many zeros as possible, and that starts with, you know, strike one and getting the two strikes as quickly as possible and then putting them away. So very fortunate to work with the talent, and that's a credit to both Coach Backich and Coach Knobel to have found these guys in the past on the recruiting trail. And, you know, another thing I also like to mention is there are three Michigan guys, and that's cool to see the best players in Michigan
coming
to Michigan, staying in Michigan. They don't need to go south to prove their big prospects. We have three of the best pitching prospects in the country in our rotation. They're all Michigan kids.
I remember last year when we went up to play Michigan State, and they brought in their closer, and he was Carl's teammate at I think Brother Rice.
And Taransky, I think they played summer ball together.
And Carl was giving the hitters a breakdown on how to hit the guy, and I thought that was really cool. That point about we might not get the kid from California, Texas. Once in a while we will.
Yep.
But keeping the local guys and the Chris Fatters from Indiana, the local, my buddy's now the head coach of Bowling Green in football, and he said there's a 4-hour radius and he wants to dominate that. And that's what we have to do. We have to dominate, get Indiana, get Illinois, get Ohio, get Michigan. And we do that, we'll do a pretty good team. Have a pretty good team.
That's right. We try and first and foremost, dominate the state of Michigan, then dominate the Midwest. And we have other pipelines in the Northeast, and we've done well in California and on the Pacific Northwest with Jesse Franklin and Willie Weiss. So we want to first establish Michigan in the Midwest and then sprinkle in guys. Michigan's a national brand, and we want to play at the national level, so we're going to need national guys. But I think you can also develop a great team with guys from the Midwest, gritty guys that understand what it's like to play in the cold, that aren't scared of it, that don't shy away from it. It's a good group in that locker room right now, and they're fully committed to doing whatever it takes to win a championship.
You just made a good point, because the one series last year I went home for the BC spring game was a crazy Maryland series we had here, where I think we got in one game on Friday or Saturday. And then we had that one game where they had to leave. They had Mr. get on their plane. And I was texting you and Coach Backich getting ready for this because the game was on the Big Ten Network. And you guys were like, hey, Beav, we're going to get the game in. Obviously, it helps. Coach Backich has a relationship with Maryland because that's where he was here previously. But Coach Riley and I, who good friend of both of ours, obviously, was watching the game with me, and he said he couldn't believe how uncomfortable the Maryland players looked, and our players looked fine. Like, hey, this is nothing.
It was
very, very noticeable, and it's a huge advantage. I'm here at a lot of practices. We're out inside. The field turf helps, obviously, but it does bother you, but it doesn't bother us. We can handle it, and I think it's harder for like a California team to come out here and do it against us. So I think that's a huge, huge mental toughness and thinking is a huge thing.
Absolutely. The field turf
huge.
Is a massive huge, addition to the program. Huge advantage. We did not have that when I was playing here.
I was about to ask you that. It came around that time right when you were leaving.
I think it was Coach Backage's second year. Yeah, second year Coach Backage's tenure. And that it allows us the time to be outside and to get our guys used to those elements. And, you know, it can be a home field advantage when it's like a series like Maryland last year where the guys are having to shovel off the field and there's sleet and there's ice and
Slurpee storm.
Yeah, it was gross, but at the same time, the guys were used to practicing that every day. And so it can be an advantage.
The funniest thing was they did the overhead of the fish, the stadium, and there were no cars because I think the city like closed. And we have so many of our players that live right near the fish, and I live 5 minutes away. And literally, the game is on, and our stat guys, Zim and a couple of the other guys, are behind home plate, and they were the only people there. And it was hilarious to watch on TV. On from that, big 6-0. We got this big West Coast series. Fats, you were just breaking it down with me. We've got, what, 6-7 teams to prepare for? Go over it. Let's talk.
Yeah, we have eight games in 10 days on this trip. We're going to open up versus CSUN, Cal State Northridge. We have three this Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Then we have two midweeks, one against Long Beach State on Tuesday and one against Cal Irvine on Wednesday, and then follow that up with the Dodgertown Classic, where we'll play UCLA at UCLA, USC at USC, and then Oklahoma State at Dodger Stadium. And so it'll be a good test. Face six different clubs, and you know, I think we'll have a much better picture of where we're at, and after this trip, know where we need to adjust going into the Big Ten play.
How hard, you just mentioned, how hard is it to prepare? You got the one series against the three games, the Northridge, mm-hmm. and then you got the single games. How hard is it to prepare for this? I can't remember anything I've had to do in my time doing anything like this. It's like an NBA schedule almost.
Yeah, it's definitely difficult. We're very fortunate here at Michigan to have the resources to have access to programs like Synergy, where we can watch a lot of film on the opposition. So you're right. It's definitely different when you have, you know, there's that stretch. Next week, we're going to have to prepare five different scouting reports. But you know what? It's just we got to turn over every stone and try and figure out a way to attack them, both their pitchers and hitters, and come up with the best plan possible to give our guys success. So it's definitely a lot more work than usual when you're preparing just one scouting report for a weekend series. But at the same time, it's a big trip for our club. There are some RPI games out there to be had, and we're going to, like I said, turn over every stone to make sure that we're as well prepared as possible.
With your connections with the Dodgers, how cool is it to be in that Dodger Town Classic?
By no means was it because of those connections, but I think it's a cool experience to go back there and to you know, go to a place that I spent a lot of time at, and you know, I think everyone that I know from the Dodgers will be down at spring training down in Arizona, so won't
that's necessarily true, yeah.
see everybody, but at the same time it'll be fun to be back on that field and to let the guys experience what it's like to play in a Major League Stadium, you know, one of the best Major League Stadiums out there. And
it's a beautiful place. People haven't been there. It's incredible. Every sports fan should go there at least once.
Yep. It's a special place. And so it'll be exciting. It'll be exciting, but it'll more than that, we're going to be facing three good clubs out there. And, you know, it'll definitely give us a better picture of where we stack up nationally. And I think the guys will be ready, and you know, it'll be a good experience.
Because you were obviously down at the Mets facility in Florida, and you mentioned you lived in Arizona, you worked for the Dodgers. How comparable is Arizona and Florida for spring training and that type of thing, Fats?
For most years, Arizona is much nicer just because of the fact that the furthest you'll ever have to travel is 45 minutes of, you know, that's the longest trip if you're playing an opposition. So a lot of them are close by. The Florida spring training, you can get into a couple hour drives. Sure. You're going to run into afternoon rain most days. So it's, you can drive 2 hours and have the games canceled. But in Arizona, it's pretty consistent weather. Although this year has been a little different. I think the last couple of weeks it's been in highs of 50s and some rain out there, which is, completely crazy for this time of year out there. But
seen snow in California, too.
It snowed in Malibu last week. So, yeah, it's a little crazy the weather, what's going on the West Coast. But I would say in a normal year, Arizona spring training is just a lot nicer. It's, the weather's extremely consistent, the low 70s, no rain. It's, and the trips are a lot easier.
Okay, before we let you rock and roll. All the news with the free agency, you and I were just talking about that, Bryce Harper, Arenado, and Machado.
Mm-hmm.
General thoughts on what's going on there and where you think happening in the next couple of days?
I think the players are all up in arms, and, the elite players like those three that you just mentioned are still going to get paid. That's not an issue. It's the other guys, the established veterans, guys that are creeping into their low to mid-30s that are having – a much tougher time finding spots.
Is that because of the PEDs being out? How do players age? They look at Albert Pujols and Miguel Cabrera. What's going on? All of the above?
I think teams are starting to realize they don't have to pay for
past
performance. And, if we're looking at over the course of history where guys, their prime years at 26 to 28 range, it's getting a little silly to have to pay guys in their 30s, multiple years with, $20 million a year to get production that you can probably get out of a younger guy in your organization. And that's cost controlled for 6 years. So I think teams are just getting smarter in how they evaluate that process. Now, a 31 to 35-year-old may give you maybe a slight bit better performance in terms of war. But if you can save $15 million and get – nearly the same performance out of a guy that's making the league minimum in their first couple of years, teams are starting to do that. And, you can supplement with the big-time guys like your Trouts, your Arenados, your Harpers, and add those to your clubs. But in terms of overall performance, when you're adding the defensive metrics that are now becoming a big part of the game combined with, offensive performance, you get a much better picture of the type of player you're getting. So, whereas Bryce Harper is an unbelievable talent with the bat, defensively, the metrics aren't great.
Nope.
And so, can I get Bryce Harper level production in terms of defensive runs saved in the outfield with an elite level defender that may not be as good with the bat? They're taking the whole picture. It's definitely a different time, I think, just with access to information. I don't believe there's collusion going on between all the teams to lower these free agent signings. But at the same time, the players, the agents, they need to get a better perspective on where the game's trending. Maybe we're not going to hold out and wait for the massive contract to come. Maybe we have to take shorter deals at higher annual values and bet on ourselves to perform. Those days of getting the long 10-15 year guaranteed deals are probably going to go to the wayside here shortly.
That's why what Arenado just did yesterday was smart, and also because they bought last season. So but the other part of it that I don't think is getting talked about enough, it's your old team, the Dodgers. The Dodgers, the Yankees, and Red Sox pretty much have set teams. That's part of what's killed Boris. He wanted Machado or Harper to get on board with the Yankees. They have surplus of outfielders and infielders. The Red Sox have Xander Bogaerts and Rafael Devers at third base. They don't need Machado. So that helps.
Yeah.
And your Dodgers are like the best development team in baseball. I mean, they gave Puig away. They have 14 outfielders. They don't know hell where Bellinger is going to play. They just have so many good young players. They didn't let Grandal go. They have a million players. I mean, and they, because the teams that develop are going to win still.
That's right. And I think there's one talent out there that would cause a team to do whatever it takes to get them. And so, and that's Mike Trout. And when Mike Trout becomes available in 2 years, he can write his own contract. But there's not a player out there that
is he going to leave the Angels?
Because
he likes it there.
He likes it there, but he also wants to win. I think he's realizing, he's been to the playoffs, I think, once in the time he's been there in 2014.
Is that true? Once?
Yeah, 2014, they won 98 games.
Didn't they just let his best buddy, the pitcher, go? It was Richards.
Garrett Richards is his best friend. Yep, let him go.
Big mistake.
Start to trend towards being a competitive club. And I believe what Billy Epler is doing with the team, I think they're doing a better job of getting the talent in there, but I think the pitching is just lacking at this point.
Fetz, explain who Billy Epler is to people who don't know who he is. Obviously, you and I know who he is.
Billy Epler is the GM. He came over. He was assistant GM with the Yankees. He came over in 2000.
Boston guy.
In 15, yep. Came over in 2015 and has done a good job building up their analytical team and their player development. And they're starting to now restock that system that, you know, may have been one of the worst in baseball when Jerry Dipoto left. So
Trader Jerry.
He just made another trade.
He literally trades everybody. Fetz, before we let you go, yep. You just talked about it. Analytics, your eyes, what works, the Sandy Aldersons, and I've got a new exciting gym running the Mets. He used to be an agent. Where do you see the game going? Because, you're an unusual situation. You're an NCAA coach now, but you have a lot of these friends. Your buddies with Gabe Kapler, who I think is a really shining star. Just talk about where you see the game going.
I think, the information is obvious. Everyone talks about analytics and how big they are in baseball.
To me, that pisses me off because they make us out to be geeks. We've always been geeks. Yep. You don't think Bill Walsh and Bill Parcells and Tom Landry and Don Shula and hey, when you go to play the Miami Dolphins, you don't know that Dan Marino is going to throw the ball 50 times, but there's a lot of, hey, what did they do on third and one? What did they do here in baseball, basketball, everything? There's information. It's information collection, just fancy names for it.
That's exactly right. And I think where the game is trending is the coach that can understand
both
and be able to utilize that information and then apply it and then not have it get to the player and be too much. So there has to be a way to have the coach that understands both sides and then be able to then translate it to the player. So you're like just a baseball translator, basically. You have to have a baseline in the old school way of teaching the game, teaching the mechanics, teaching deliveries, teaching stances and hitting approaches, that sort of thing. But then combining that with the access to the information that now we have, not only at the professional level, but even at the college level, we have the same access to that information. And then being able to then make it digestible for the players so they know what to work on. They know how it pertains to them and their game. And
exactly. It's a great example, Fetz. Yeah. You have the analytics say this guy's a dead red fastball hitter. You have a pitcher, fastball is not his best pitch.
Right.
But he's got sliders. So instead, you stay away. Do you go by what works for your guy, or you worry more about the other guy? That's always what I ask.
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And for the longest time, we've heard throughout the game of baseball, pitch to your strengths.
Exactly.
But if you don't combine that with the hitter's weakness, then you're only, it's the old Sun Tzu art of war. You combine
Bill
your
Belichick's
strengths
a
versus
huge,
their weaknesses. And
Belichick's a huge disciple of that guy.
Yep.
Just to give you an idea of what we were just talking about, and I'll let you go. The Patriots in the Super Bowl, how they handled Jared Goff, the Rams quarterback, was McVay, the head coach, offense coordinator, would coach him up till 15 seconds on the headset, the time clock. The quarterback has direct communication in his helmet with the coach. At 15 seconds, the Patriots have changed their defense. And like Goff has ordered Chinese food, and at 15 seconds is Mexican. and that's basically what the Patriots did the whole game. So just to give you an idea.
Jeez.
But again, my buddy Chris Futter, Michigan pitching coach, basically 10-day segment coming up here.
Mm-hmm.
This is B's World in the Den. Team 153, I got it right.
Team 153.
B's World, powered by M-Den, fueled by pizza. Thanks again, Fats. Go Blue.
Thanks, B.
Anytime.
B's World.
Love you, buddy. You know that.
Oh, love you too, bud.
Go Blue!